Thanks for tuning in to the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to provide support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of the nation's heroes and our families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, you might be. There's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member. If you get something out of today's episode, it's mandatory. So we will check.
And today is an episode chocked full of just cute conversations about puppies.
Puppies. While ours run around on the floor right here. So our guests today are from Patriot Paws. It is a nonprofit out of Rockwall, Texas. They help connect service members and first responders with their forever furry friends. We have today Rick Stevens. He is a former police officer. Now the director of operations of Patriot Paws, and April Allison. She's a former CW3 rare in the Marine Corps for 20 plus years, right?
Yes.
And now she works for Patriot Paws as well. So welcome, both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome to the show. And first and foremost, I have to thank you guys and your team for allowing us to stay at your facility and record these podcasts. So I know we'll dive into kind of this homestead a little bit of what you do for veterans and allow them to kind of have a place they can go without paying for hotels and stuff like that while they go through their training or even just if it's open. So thank you guys so much for letting us come out here.
Absolutely.
But welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's peel back the layers a little bit and dive into the kind of the foundations of how y'all started. So law enforcement and Marine Corps. There's a lot of Marines around this place, I will say.
There is a lot of us here.
So, tell us how you got started in law enforcement.
So it's really humble beginnings, and I don't want to take any more credit than, you know, that what happened. So I started off in the jail, worked my way up through that department, and then worked my way into a transfer deputy position. Okay. All right. So I wasn't out in the glory, out in the field on patrol or anything like that. My county that I was associated with was a federal holding facility for this local area. So my duty was basically transporting inmates back and forth between federal court and hospitals and things like that. So when we say police officer, really transfer deputy, I can't really take much more credit than that.
Don't discount your service.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it, but I wanted to be sure that there's no claimed glory outside of what actually happened. That being said, once I was getting ready to take my sergeant's test, my wife approached me and she said, "Hey, I think I want to go to law school." She got into a law school in Alabama. We moved over to Alabama, stayed there for 5 or 6 years while she went through law school. And I worked my way into market investigations for retail companies as a transition. And then ended up running multiple retail stores in the state of Alabama, specifically with JCPenney of all places. When I was coming back, deciding whether I wanted to get back into law enforcement in the Texas area from Alabama, my wife was talking about starting a family and kind of asked me not to. And then I was going to go back into retail management. And then Patriot Paws, who was started by my mother, reached out to me and said, "Hey, I could really use your skill set here. We're growing faster than we know what to do with." And one thing led to another. And I didn't intend to stay here long because my wife actually was planning to go JAG in the Marines. Okay. She's a lawyer. And so that being said, this was supposed to be temporary and ended up getting here, loving it, and never intended to work for Patriot Paws. But once I got here, I couldn't leave.
So. Fell in love with it. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. And April, how about yourself? Tell us about your background.
So I'm originally from Arkansas. I joined the Marine Corps. I enlisted in 2002, mainly because I was bored. So no glory story there or anything. I was just really bored. I was a graphic designer.
Post 9/11. Yeah. Bored.
Yeah. And it wasn't about, you know, I want to go fight for my country or anything like that. I just wanted to make my own route.
Sure.
You know, with no one's help. So
absolutely.
I joined the Marine Corps. I tried to join the Air Force. They were never there, you know, so, and I happened to know the Marine Corps recruiter cause he was trying to recruit my cousin. So I joined the Marine Corps and, you know, 17 days later, I was off to boot camp.
Wow.
And this is an enlisted contract at first?
Yeah. So I was a telephone pole climber. I basically did fiber optics, ran telephone cable, dug ditches, played in manholes all day. It was real fun. You know, and then later on, I did serve in Iraq and Afghanistan, but I decided to go the chief warrant officer route. So I applied for it and I got selected, went on through that and became a platoon commander and all those things. And, you know, at the 20-year mark, I decided my kids, I have two boys, and I decided that they needed a little bit more stability. Mm. They were trying to move us again, and I was like, yeah, we're done with this. So we moved to Texas and took a year off. Was really, really bored.
What did your husband do?
I'm not married.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You had how many kids?
I have two kids.
Okay. So that must have been difficult as well.
Yes.
As managing a military schedule as a single parent.
Yeah. Well, and so their father, while we were together, was in the Marine Corps as well.
Okay.
So we were both in the Marine Corps. We kind of followed each other around to help each other out. So I spent a lot of time in the field. I was with division, so I was in the field a lot, about 8 months out of the year. So he would just help me. Yeah. So, and then, you know, I moved my sister-in-law in with me. I just did whatever I had to do to help them out. So it was rough on them. So that's another reason I decided to retire.
I mean, 20 years. Yeah. It's a good time to retire.
Oh yeah. 20 years and 6 days.
Yeah. Every day counts.
Oh yeah.
I feel that. So, so what did that look like for you on a day-to-day, from an enlisted perspective versus a chief warrant officer's perspective?
So it's a whole different animal. Enlisted wise, you know, you're being told what to do all the time until you're a certain rank. And then you get a little bit more of the authority to manage and supervise. And so I crossed over as a staff sergeant in E6. And I had been that for about 6 years. It wasn't for me anymore. I wanted to be able to make change in my community. And so that's why I went the warrant officer route. And as it was like day one of switching over, and as soon as I got pinned, it was strange, right? You're just kind of like, oh, I go from saluting a couple people to everybody, you know? And I remember this one time I was at the basic school, and that's the officer school that we have to go to. And the sergeant major is, we're walking in the chow hall and he's saluting me and I'm just like, do, 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 you know? And he says, ma'am. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's for me, you know? So it took a little bit of getting used to, but once you find your niche and you become that platoon commander and you realize, you know, I'm not just kind of in charge of them. I'm fully in charge of them and the safety and their well-being. And I mean, it's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said you retired right at 20 years or 20 years and 6 days.
Yes.
And you took a year off. What did you do with your year off? Deservedly so. I mean,
I did absolutely nothing except for I moved from North Carolina down here, stayed with my sister and her husband while I looked for a house. And they live on 20 acres, and they have cows and chickens. And
perfect.
So I just took care of the farm, and, you know.
That's a good transition period.
And I took my son to school and picked him up from school. I did things that I couldn't do before.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. So then you shortly got involved with Patriot Paws after that.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
You talk about that. What brought you over here? What got you involved, and what are you doing?
Honestly, it was a Facebook post that got me involved. It was for a receptionist position, and my niece saw it, and she said, this is up your alley. This is perfect for you. You love animals. Mm. You're a veteran. You love veterans. This is great for you. It's something to do. Because I didn't want to do communications after the Marine Corps.
Sure.
So I actually just sent an email, you know, and came and interviewed. And so I did the receptionist position for a while, and then the veteran coordinator position came open, and I went through some brutal interviews for that, a couple rounds, and competed against a lot of people.
Really?
Can you define the brutality?
Well, so
this is a CW3 Marine saying brutal interview.
They really put me on the spot. It wasn't just Rick interviewing me. It was a whole panel of people, you know, and then also Lori, our CEO and founder.
Yeah.
You're just like,
And she asked some difficult questions?
Yeah, there was a lot of difficult questions. And I think the first round was a lot of the difficult questions. Mm-hmm. And it was just from every angle that I guess I just didn't expect, you know, but it's definitely been things I've dealt with. after being in this position. So,
can you talk about that a little bit? What types of things do you encounter?
So we encounter all kinds of stuff. We talked about the networking stuff. So like this, right? So this is not really up my alley. It's out of my comfort zone. So stuff like this and just equality, things like that, and just making sure that I am equal across the board for all of our veterans.
Good. That's great.
That's it's an interesting perspective, as Christian mentioned, you know, come from a CW3 position to being brutalized at the local Patriot Paws interview. Not so cute and cuddly.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be that. It was not.
I created it to be like an interview board that you would have going through a law enforcement promotion, or from what I can tell, a
military promotion.
Yes, sure.
So I had a member from each branch along with myself conduct the interviews.
Okay.
And so that way I didn't miss anything, because obviously I'm not a veteran. And so, I mean, I look at a DD-214 and I'm like, I know this means that you're no longer in the military.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had guys that say, well, she has XYZ, you know, she's a badass, or, you know, this doesn't look right. Mm. And so we weeded out a lot. We had a lot of people apply, and it's a very important position. Mm-hmm. And we just couldn't pass up on April.
Well, I'd say that it comes from a point of passion and from a point of caring, right? You put those stipulations and those rules in place, and, and you have a harsh interview to ensure that they're passionate enough, that they care enough, they want to be here.
And within this position, her position as a veteran coordinator is our frontline voice to all of those veterans out there that may be seeking help.
Sure.
And I need to be sure that the person on the other end of that phone can speak that language
and
can relate to those individuals who are calling.
Quite frankly, part of the face of the organization. That is the bread and butter of everything that you do, is engaging with veterans that come through the program.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit on both sides what the day-to-day operations look like for you?
How about you go first?
Okay. So day-to-day for me, it varies by day and by week, by month. We have a lot of events that we do here, but I'm always prepping for graduation. I'm always looking at applications, going through those, trying to help those veterans out, get everything that they need in order to get a dog from us. And if they don't qualify, or say they have allergies, we may not have a dog that's suitable for their needs. I help them find an organization that does, you know, give them references and resources for that. So there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of interaction with our veterans. So we don't have a list. We have a pool. And so once they are tentatively approved, we put them in the pool, and we call them every month, and we call our teams every month. So it's not a here's your dog, see you later. It's a we're family now, and you're talking to us every month, if you like it or not. You know, so we keep in contact. But for some of these veterans, we are their only family. So we've had veterans go into the hospital before, and they're like, what do I do with my dog? Well, bring your dog down. We'll take until you're done.
I think that's a really important aspect, and not to be just kind of rushed past, is the ability for a nonprofit, veteran support, or a military support organization to follow up with its beneficiaries is so important. Because a lot of the times we see organizations who are focused on, you know, the pictures that come out of that so that they can raise more funds.
Absolutely.
At the expense of truly diving in and helping. You know, something that we say at the Robert Irvine Foundation too is, when we provide support, welcome to the family. You know, this is this is a lifelong engagement now. So we're here to help whatever the need is. So that's a really important aspect.
And that's our training program, and I get into more detail about this a little bit later, but what separates us from a lot of service organizations is, after that veteran receives that dog, we send a trainer to their home and customize that dog to that veteran. Wow. And then not only do we follow up on a regular basis, whether that be monthly, quarterly, depending on their status with us, we also revisit them every year for the remainder of that dog's life. Wow. And then when that dog passes away, which dogs don't live forever, we all know that, they are first in line for a second placement.
Right? Wow.
Now, granted, we always ask those veterans to have a grieving period of a year, but sometimes those veterans can't wait that long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys that are struggling, either severely mobility disabled, or struggle with severe traumatic brain injury or PTSD, that's part of our program here to be sure that we follow up with that lifelong support.
That's fantastic.
Now, how long is your typical, I mean, the ask is for any nonprofit organization, the fight is never over. And you're never going to hit the impact that you want to make. It's always going to be just endless, right? So what does that pool look like for you guys? And like, say we had someone that reached out and said, hey, you know, I want to get a service dog. I hit all the qualifications. They're properly vetted. How long does that process typically take?
So the process normally takes anywhere for, as of right now, probably 2.5 to 3 years. There's a lot of logistics that go into that number. A lot of the training logistics. It takes us 2 to 2.5 years to even train one dog, right? Wow. Now we're working on processes to get that number down and get that pool down. Now how the pool works, and I could explain this very easily. The reason we have pools is because not every dog is made for every single individual person. At Patriot Paws, we let the dog pick their veteran or their first responder, however that works. Because obviously, if you like the dog, but the dog doesn't like you, it's not going to be a successful placement.
Sure.
And we are in the business of training medical devices to assist these guys or these ladies with their everyday quality of life, right? Mm. So if I have dogs, say we have 8 veterans coming, I normally will have double the amount of dogs. So I'll have 16 dogs ready to go. We'll say 4 of those veterans are mostly PTSD related, and the other 4 are mobily disabled. So that means I have to have enough dogs ready to meet those needs. Sometimes I may only have dogs that are extremely skilled with wheelchairs or prosthetics, right? So at that point, we look at the pool and we look at who's been waiting longest, who has the most physically disabled need, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
If I have dogs that aren't super strong around wheelchairs, prosthetics, or with mobile disability, I may look at the pool and see who's been waiting the longest that has, more severe PTSD or a higher traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
And that's where April can probably go into the details of how she identifies those and does that selection process.
That's the veterans.
Oh, yeah. So I feel like I read their applications over and over and over. And I do, because I want to make sure that I'm doing right by them. There's a lot of them that have PTSD, TBI, and mobility issues. So, you know, I work hand in hand with those trainers and try to find out which dogs we have available and who's suited best, you know, and there's a lot of things that go into that, even down to, does this dog work around a child? Do they have a 1-year-old or maybe a 10-year-old, you know, stuff like that. So I really weed through that pool, and I spent a lot of time looking at that list, and I was like, which one is best for what, you know? So it's a group effort.
What are some, like, you know, obviously I've had almost a decade of reviewing DD214s and applications. What are some of your favorite, just absolutely dequal issues that you see come up? Like, you know, I mean, everyone who's familiar with the DD214 looks at type of separation, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, there's organizations out there that dishonorable, obviously you're not going to get the support you need.
That's it for us. Okay. It's the type of separation.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had people lie. I've had people and paste names onto DD214.
So we have a funny story about what we were told. I'm not going to say it was a lie, but we had a guy come in telling his valor stories of war and how he was a sniper in Vietnam and then got his DD214 and it said he was in the army band. He was listed as a saxophonist. And we were like, story in that DD214 don't match up.
Yeah.
But, and what was his response to that?
You know, some of those
the
things
band
you
was my cover.
You kind of leave some things alone. I mean, you know, the band in the Marine Corps, they are. They serve as defense for the headquarters battalion.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they actually do. You know, the Marine Corps is a little bit different than
they are different, yeah.
Everybody else, I guess.
Oh, was that a flex? That was like a slight flex.
Listen,
I saw on that.
I have to hang out with Army guys all day, every day. We have these 2 Vietnam vets. We call them the Dons. They come in every morning and have coffee. So it's customary for them to pick on me to pick on them, you know, yeah. So it's a good time.
There's one thing I do really love about Rockwall is it just feel the interconnectivity mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. like a veteran just walking into a business just to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Like you see that everywhere here though. Mm-hmm. It's really unique, and I digress, but I just had to mention that it's really cool kind of family environment that you've brought into this entity.
It's a very close-knit veteran community. And as a lot of the local guys will say, on this side of the lake, because then you have a Rockwall separated from Dallas by Lake Ray Hubbard. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's kind of things that go on that side of the lake. And then we have our little close-knit group on this side of the lake. But over the past few years, a lot of local community leaders that I think y'all have interviewed on your podcast mm-hmm. here recently have really rallied that community. And it's starting to look stronger now than it has in years. And something we're really excited mm-hmm. about to be a part of.
They've done a very effective job because it's something we rarely see these days is local community coming back together.
I heard a vet the other day said that he moved from Colorado Springs just because he heard how close-knit this community was.
Wow.
He knew nobody here. He just heard of the community and heard a few guys' names, reached out to him, and they're like, sure, if you want to move down here, we'll hang out with you.
He's in the middle of an intense board right now, I heard. An interview. Just kidding.
Well, it's great because we all support each other, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how you're successful here. And that's how we help each other.
Yeah.
You know, and get these veterans what they need,
sure.
what they deserve.
Well, it's something I feel like we've lost in the internet age is the local community, right? It's something we saw abundantly in the 90s and the early 2000s. And with the advent of social media, it's helped us stay so much in touch that we are out of touch with each other when it comes to being in person.
In the physical space, there's no engagement, hardly at all.
Mm-hmm. Rarely.
I think it plays a high role in what we see with a lot of mental health disabilities that we're seeing coming out, higher depression rates, anxiety rates. I think mm-hmm. social media plays into a lot of that. And that's a whole podcast within
that's
itself.
Proven. Anxiety, and then the dopamine just mm-hmm. dump that you get as well is now, I mean, even probably you face this on a day-to-day basis. What do you do 2 hours of silence? Mm-hmm. Like you feel like you're missing out on life, right?
Yeah, well, I might be the exception. I don't really do social media.
Good for you. I don't mean social media in general. I mean just the dopamine hits of everything. You're stimulated by everything.
Oh, yeah.
The billboards, the TV, the Instagram, whatever it is, TikTok, videos, people sending, texting, emails. Mm-hmm. You have to respond to an email in an hour nowadays, whereas it used to be the freaking Pony Express, man. Mm-hmm. It would take 3 weeks to get a letter delivered, from Austin to Dallas,
And that's what a lot of people don't realize, kind of bringing it back to service dogs. One of the things that a lot of people, how does a service dog really help? Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a guy that maybe suffers from mild post-traumatic stress and maybe has, a bad back from mm-hmm. his time in the service, right? One of the biggest things a lot of people don't realize is he spent the majority of his time after the service sitting in a chair, and he didn't mm-hmm. want to leave his house. And part of this, getting a dog from our organization, it helps that dog has to be taken care of on a regular basis. Yep. It gets them out of that chair. They have to feed him. They have to take him out. They have to reinforce that training that they've had over the past 2 years and not let mm-hmm. that dog degrade, right?
Yeah.
And it helps them getting out and about. They have to go to vet visits from time to time. So a lot of people don't think that there's that aspect of service dog work. It's not just the dog can help you with mobile disability, get your phone, pick up your keys, help you open a door, get a drink out of the fridge, help you do the laundry, you name it, we can train them to basically do it. But there's that aspect of just, it gets them out because they genuinely have to care for the dog in which they receive.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's a whole nother part that we can tie into that.
Yeah, and it gets you out of that independence as well, that mm-hmm. individualist perspective of a service dog needs service as well, right?
Yes.
So you get into that service mindset. That's a great point. Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. What types of trainings do you guys offer here for the dogs? I know you've mentioned being more comfortable with mobile devices or prosthetics, PTSD.
So Patriot Paws, our mission is to train and provide service dogs of the highest quality for disabled veterans with physical disabilities. And we include post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury in, as part of physical disabilities, right?
Sure.
But we primarily focus on mobile disability, PTSD, and TBI. We train three types of dogs. One is a full access service dog. So that dog can do fully trained, can go anywhere with you in public, right? Other than private property, right? Anywhere service animals are allowed. The second type of dog we train is what we call a facility dog. And that's a dog who will be in police departments, fire stations, child advocacy centers, women advocacy centers, things like that, kind of as emotional support dog, right? Mm-hmm. That dog has public access only to that facility in which they are certified to go to. And then we train what we call an in-home working dog, which is a dog who does not meet our standards for public access, but is an extremely well-trained dog and may be able to help a veteran or first responder that doesn't suffer as much from a physical disability or post-traumatic stress as much or on a, as a severe level. And that dog can help with inside the home, it just doesn't have public access. Mm-hmm. The reason areas in which that may happen is if we have a dog in training, for example, we had a dog that was hit in training by a shopping cart. Scared of shopping carts the rest of his life. We could not break him of that fear of shopping carts. Well, obviously, that eliminates him from going out in public.
Sure.
But he's a well-trained dog. Mm-hmm. And there may be a vet or a first responder that can go to work every day, specifically first responders, right? Mm-hmm. We can't place a full access service dog with an active duty police officer. But when he comes home, he could have a well-trained dog that's trained to pick up on night terrors, mm-hmm. that's trained to pick up seizures, whatever it may be. And we can customize that dog after placement. So those are the three types of dogs we place with the focuses in which we train for.
And what breed of dogs?
So primarily Labrador Retrievers, just for their ability to bond closely, the longevity of health and life, mm-hmm. And they have a higher work ethic than most dogs that you see. Other dogs that are successful in our program are Golden Retrievers, but one thing you see with Golden Retrievers is they're happy-go-lucky and they wanna be friends with everybody, and yeah. sometimes when you're trying to get them to bond with one person, it's not necessarily the temperament you wanna go with. Mm. From our experience, other organizations have great success with Goldens, just not for our particular type of training. Where we see Goldens be more successful is that facility dog role, right? Where they can go love on everybody in that briefing yeah. room, everybody in that fire station, right?
Yeah.
All of those kids who have to testify in court for the horrific crimes that have been committed to them. That's where Golden Retrievers shine. Primarily, those are the only two dogs in which we use in our program.
Okay. Now, do you offer training for people with dogs already?
No. So how our program works is we train our own dogs mm-hmm. from infancy. We literally breed our own, or we get them from reputable breeders, and then we train them to 2 to 2.5 years of age.
Okay.
The reason we do that is a lot of organizations have success with getting dogs out of shelters, and that's great cause. A lot of those have the save two lives at one time. Great causes. Mm-hmm. For our training, it doesn't work for us because we can't guarantee what type of trauma or what environment that dog came from prior to entering into our program, right?
Absolutely.
So to control that success rate and a higher quality of dog, and that's actually gonna be a more of a benefit to that veteran or first responder more than a hindrance.
Sure.
We train our own dog so that we can control the environment and the training and all the medical care until that dog is placed. Because one thing we focus on is we do not want those dogs to be a hindrance to those veterans once they receive them. Mm-hmm. There is going to be a quality of life change because sometimes some of our trainers say it's like having a 2-year-old again. And it, at some point, that's true, right? You have a dog you have to clean up after, you get to feed them, you got to take care of them,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So there is a quality of life change, but hopefully once that bond is established, they'll notice the difference right off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay. So how, I'm very curious to this one, is how do you train a PTS service animal?
So that's where the bond comes in. So most of our dogs graduate knowing roughly 65, 70 cues, and that can be a lot of things that are simple like tug. At that point, we can rotate that into open a refrigerator and, you know, retrieve, and then they can get a Coke and stuff like that out. So we train them all these basic cues, right? Where the PTSD comes in is really once that veteran goes home with that dog after graduation, we have a bonding period that's anywhere between 2 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then after that time where they, and that veteran will hand feed that dog, no one else feeds that dog other than that. And that bond is created there that dog realizes, hey, you're the person I go to for my life, for mm-hmm. my sustenance, right? And that's when that bond starts to be created. And we start noticing amazing things when that bond's created. Naturally, they can start picking up on the chemical changes within the body. We don't have to teach them how to do that. They can do that naturally, mm-hmm. right? And they start picking up on when night terrors happen, potentially when blood sugar is low. Now, we can try to help train towards those things, but it's not something we focus on. Again, we try to focus on mobile disability. But when it comes to PTSD, sometimes just the calming effect in the dopamine we were talking about, the brain releases when it pets a dog, sometimes it's all they need, right? Mm-hmm. So it gets complex. But it's kind of the best way I can explain it.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense. Makes total sense. So typically when you guys are doing your training iterations throughout the year, mm-hmm. are you blocking dogs together? Are you training multiple dogs at the same time? Is it a few at a time? How does that training
program
work?
So we have a very intricate operation, you know, and logistics in regards to getting these dog trains. And that's where my job comes in.
Okay.
This is kind of where I'm this is what I'm in charge of, is all the operations. So I get kind of nerdy when I talk about it. But a lot of people don't realize what goes into the training of these dogs and how much time and effort and money goes into the training. So it costs Patriot Paws roughly $45,000 a dog that goes through our program. We give these dogs away completely for free to these veterans. Okay. If anybody takes anything from that, let it be that if you need help, and if we can't help you, we can find somebody who will. Mm-hmm. But that dog is completely free. Obviously, there's a little bit of a buy-in that you have to, obviously, if you want a quality dog from us, it's going to be a little bit of a time to wait, right?
Sure.
But how this works is we get the dogs from either we breed them ourselves or we get them from trusted breeders. They go through anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks of training and desensitization to different textures, motion, and things like that from very early age. First thing we start to train them with is eye contact, right? Naturally from a dog, eye contact is not a natural instinct, mm-hmm. right? It's something that has to be trained.
Okay.
So we train with that.
We should go on the reverse training for my dog because all she does is stare at me for like as long as she's awake.
That's not a bad problem to have. Okay. That means she looks to you as her lifeline, right?
Okay.
In our dogs,
that's a little excessive.
We only use positive reinforcement. Our dogs, just like we do, our dogs work for our food. Now, that's not to say if they aren't, you know, if they aren't training, they're not getting fed. That's not how that works. Dogs get a handful in the morning, settle their stomach. They work for their kibble throughout the day, and then they get fed out whatever they don't eat throughout the day at night, right? Okay. So our dogs are fed, but they work for their food mm-hmm. during their training. So we have multiple places in which our dogs go to be trained. They can be here at our campus here in Rockwall at this training center where they'll basically learn basic obedience or will work on dogs that are struggling in their training and need that extra help. I have 8 professional trainers on staff that address kind of those issues.
Wow.
The next area that these dogs can move to is our prison program. We have a program with Texas Department of Criminal Justice here in Texas in which we have inmate trainers who volunteer to help us train our dogs. We call that our puppy boot camp or dog boot camp, whatever you call it, because they focus on reinforcing the default behaviors of a dog. So sit, lay down, stay, recall, things like that. The basic things that they can focus on in a controlled environment. If the dog needs more socialization, we have a partnership with Texas A&M in College Station where I have 250 students each semester volunteer to help be puppy raisers for us.
Wow.
And we train those students. They have to go through a whole semester training class. We train those students how to be a dog handler and train our style of training. Mm-hmm. And at that point, normally after that 250, we kind of weed through. We normally end up with about 100 or 80 that are actually in our program that are puppy raisers for us. And it's normally 1 to 2 dogs per 3 puppy raisers, right? And they rotate. If one has to go out of town, this one can take it. But they still reinforce that same level of socialization and training. I can't tell you how many keg parties our dogs have been to. But, you know, it's that level of socialization.
Yeah, gotta get that experience up.
We also have what we call Dallas-Fort Worth puppy raisers. So it's people with everyday lives that go to regular office jobs or that may be could be stay-at-home parents, whatever the case may be, take them to the grocery store, to their place of work, all that fun stuff to help that socialization. The number one reason that Patriot Paws fails a dog for their program is normally fear-related. Once that fear is in a dog, it can manifest into other non-desirable behaviors, right? Growling, food aggression, you know, things like that. So that's kind of in a nutshell, all the back-end logistics of what it looks like to get these dogs trained. We rotate these dogs through all of those programs every 90 days. And so that's so we can focus on different areas of their training and be sure that they don't bond to one particular person.
Okay.
So in a nutshell, it's kind of the background operations of how we operate.
That's amazing. I mean, it seems quite extensive.
It's a lot that goes into it for
sure. Yeah, absolutely. And how many dogs are you training every year approximately?
Currently in our program, we have roughly between 80 to 90 dogs at the moment.
Wow.
With starting our breeding facility and having our purpose bred dogs, by the end of 2025, we should have 125 dogs in the program.
Wow.
Once we hit 125 dogs, we start pushing our infrastructure and stressing out our employees and our volunteers. And obviously, Patriot Paws is in it to train high quality dogs. Mm-hmm. And we never want to sacrifice on that quality of dog, right?
Yeah.
That is our number one priority, is that we have a quality dog to improve the quality of life for the veteran. So once we start reaching a point where that you start sacrificing the quality for the quantity, we have an issue, right?
That's great.
And so we try to find that fine line. Right now, how our infrastructure sits, we can handle about 100 and still maintain that quality. We've expanded a few of our facilities. We're building a new breeding facility. Right now it's under construction, should be done in the next few weeks.
Okay.
We've also opened a whole secondary location in College Station to handle the amount of student volunteers that we have, right? Yeah. So with those expansions, we can handle a little bit more. And so we're gradually increasing it to 125 to be sure. Now, remember I mentioned to you a while ago that it takes two to two and a half years to train a dog. Mm-hmm. And then it may take anywhere from 2.5 years to 3 years for that veteran that's on the list to receive a dog.
Yeah. Sure.
With these new infrastructure stuff mm-hmm. that we're putting in place and the higher amount of dogs we have in the program, we should start seeing that wait time come down.
Okay.
And that's the tricky part of this business is how can we get the wait time and help these guys as quick as possible,
yeah.
but still give them a quality product that's mm-hmm. going to improve their quality of life. And that's where we have to play the balancing act in this line of work.
That's fantastic.
And we oftentimes see that with nonprofits is they focus on the quantity over mm-hmm. the quality. And affecting the change of an individual's quality of life is just as important as affecting a hundreds,
yep.
in my opinion, at least. I mean, and I love that approach. I commend you guys for that.
As long as I have a say in it, that will always be our philosophy.
Yeah,
we will never focus on the number. Yeah. And that's what I tell people. You know, we get these vets on the phone, and this is where April's job comes in. You know, that's a long time.
It is.
You know, two and a half years, 3 years, that's a long, I can't wait that long. Yeah. We understand that.
Yeah.
But in respect to the individuals who are already in our pool waiting mm-hmm. for a dog, I can't bump you to the top of the list, yeah. right? So that's where Patriot Pulse comes in and our veteran department comes into being a resource.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not really legal in Texas yet, I love the idea of being a resource, whether it's psychedelics or a huge thing in the veteran mm-hmm. community and the law enforcement community right now.
Absolutely.
I know Texas isn't there yet, but marijuana is a huge thing. Anything we can do and be a resource for these guys, yeah. obviously we're not going to become a distributor of those items, but if we can partner with organizations mm-hmm. yeah. that, you know, that can be our kind of our open door to these guys, like, hey, we may not be able to help you now. If you're willing to wait mm-hmm. with us, we have these other options available that may be able to help you in the meantime. Or we are a part of what we call Assistant Dogs International. And that's very important if you're looking for a service dog, is to look for that accreditation, ADI. So what that means is ADI is kind of the world governing body of service dog organizations.
Okay.
And it's like a stamp of approval. If you have an ADI accreditation as a service dog organization, that means you've been vetted top to bottom and audited as deep as you can go, whether it's into your finances, your training methods, the quality of dogs. So if you're looking for a service dog, go to assistantdogsinternational.org and look. Type in the zip code, search, and look for accredited service dog organizations in your area.
Sure.
If Patriot Pulse can't help you, give us a call, and we'll be more than happy to supply you with other accredited organizations that may have a shorter wait list. Again, like you said earlier, I'm not going to be able to meet the need that we have. But if I can find another organization that I know is going to improve your quality of life, Patriot Pulse is all for it.
Yeah.
We're not here for the glory. We're here to make a difference.
I think that interorganizational connectivity and collaboration is so prominent in the veteran organization space. It's absolutely great and definitely different than it's been, especially over the years, to be able to have a conversation about, you know, plant-based medicines and service dogs. It looks at the overall holistic health of the veteran or whoever is looking for that kind of help. So something to be commendable for as well is there's two sides of the organization, right?
Absolutely.
There's running it structurally, the organizational aspect, and then the product, you know, is mm-hmm. And that's the dogs, is getting these guys the help they need. I know a lot of organizations out there that are strong in probably one or the other, mm-hmm. but not both. And it sounds to me like you have that system down really well, ready and thinking about scaling and growing, but yet doing the right thing for the veteran. And that's huge.
And as being a nonprofit, it's not only worried about the quality of product and managing the back-end operations, is my doing what's best with my donors' money.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest thing. Obviously, we are 100% funded as a nonprofit by private donations, you know, over 90% of which are individual donors.
Wow.
You know, 10% of Patriot Pulse donations come from corporations or grants. The other roughly, and these numbers may fluctuate 10-15%, so forgive me.
Sure.
But, you know, normally it's anywhere between 75-90% of our donations are individual donors who donate on an average of $25 a donation.
Wow. Right?
That's what we're funded by. And I have to be sure that those individuals are happy with how this organization is running.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right?
And that's a fine line to walk in regards
really
to
is.
being sure that we produce, and that's one thing I get a comment on. You mentioned earlier talking about the number of dogs we place. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID and post-COVID, obviously it had a great, COVID had a great effect on us because we couldn't get our dogs out and socialize them. So we lost a lot of dogs in training because some default behaviors, you know, that didn't, that they grew into that didn't meet our training standards, right? Mm-hmm. So on average right now, our average number of placement per year is 12 dogs. That is not acceptable for where I want it to be, right? Mm-hmm. Especially you get not just individual donors, but you get corporate donors and grants looking at us like, you have this level of operating budget and you're only placing 12 dogs, that's a problem. I agree, that's a problem, mm-hmm. right? And so we have to figure out how we can manage that money correctly to maintain that quality of product and get that wait time down for these vets and these first responders, right? Mm-hmm. And playing that balancing act is extremely difficult. But if anybody has any, if anybody's looking into Patriot Paws and wants that kind of information, know we're working on it. We know that 12 dogs is not where we want to be. We know it's not helping these guys fast enough, but we're trying to manage that balancing act of being sure that we don't sacrifice that quality. But in the next, in 2025 and 2026, you should see from us anywhere between 25 and 30 dog placements a year. Wow. And that should definitely help that number go down.
Dramatic increase.
Now it, I want, for the last thing, I want you to kind of touch over this house.
Yeah.
And the facility. I mean, pretty new facility here that you guys got set up.
Beautiful.
So Patriot Paws started in 2006, and we started in a little bitty storefront here in Rockwall, Texas. After that, obviously, we grew faster than we know what to do with, and we moved into one metal building on our main campus here. This campus is 3.5 acres. We started off in our admin building. The building next to us was a gym. They moved out, built another facility. We got that building next to them. And then we started having issues with housing dogs, and it wasn't a facility. A metal building with a concrete floor is not a facility for a bunch of dogs, right? Yeah. Cleaning up after them. So at that point in 2000, so we moved here roughly 2008, 2009. We built our kennels in roughly 2016. And then after that, you know, we started realizing we train dogs for veterans nationwide, you know, Alaska, Hawaii, you name it. I've got dogs in 40 of the 50 states right now, I believe, right? So we train nationwide. And so we started having these veterans come out. And the only thing that veterans have to do to get a dog from us other than the wait list, or the pool, excuse me, is they have to come to Patriot Paws for 2 weeks to learn how to become a dog handler, mm-hmm. and then us to customize that dog to them and then send them home for the bonding period and then the later customization after that, right? Well, when these veterans come in, to minimize that financial impact, because they don't pay us a dime, mm-hmm. but they do have to have a little bit of buy-in and show us that this dog isn't just going to end up in the backyard, right? This dog is a 2.5-year, $45,000 investment for Patriot Paws and our donors.
Yeah, okay. And it's a living animal.
It's a little bit, it shows us that they're committed. So they have to come give us 2 weeks of their time. Well, when they come here, we realized that we wanted to minimize the financial burden that they had for that buy-in process. So we had what we call our vet house built, and that's what this is. And so anytime veterans come to the Patriot Paws facility, they can stay in this house free of charge. They simply just have to call us ahead of time and reserve it. Mm-hmm. And that goes for anything. That goes for graduations, whether they're coming to receive their dog. Normally people ask, well, how do you juggle, you know, if you have four vets, how do you get to pick who lives in the house? We do it by their level of disability. If I have guys that are, you know, physically able, but they may struggle for some severe PTSD, we'll put them wherever they're comfortable in regards to the hotel. But if I have a guy in a wheelchair, obviously I'm going to want him to stay here because it's easier for him. So that's kind of how we manage that. And anytime they come for recertification, they have to get recertified every year with us to be sure that we ensure that the dog's taking care of them and they're taking care of the dog. And to be sure that that training is reinforced, they get to stay here free of charge. Wow. So it's just to lessen that financial impact. And really, honestly, we don't advertise it a lot, but if the guys are just coming through, if they're on vacation and need a place to stay and the house is open and they're part of this family, come on.
That's great.
Yeah, and I just have to echo about this vet house as well, as, you know, we got to stay here and set up a few podcasts. Mm-hmm. And absolutely phenomenal snacks, coffee, you know, Tempur-Pedic mattresses. Yeah, I mean, it's really nice. And the inclusion that you have, it feels like you're staying at your family's house.
Yeah. And ADA compliant too. They got 36-inch doors, seats in the showers. Yeah.
So one thing that I'm really big on, and it's part of my philosophy of operating a nonprofit, is there's tons of nonprofits, right? There's tons of service organizations. So how can I ensure that people will, you know, one, donate their money to my organization over other nonprofits, and how can I ensure that when veterans are looking for an organization to get a service offer, what sets us apart?
Yeah.
And a word that rings true with me is hospitality, right? Mm. Anybody can come in and train a dog. Obviously, there's different standards. There's plenty of organizations that other people can go to get a dog, and I encourage them to go and do their research and look for those. But, you know, I've had multiple people tell me, you know, I was on the list of this organization and I came here and it just feels different, mm-hmm. you know? And I had a guy tell me the other day, he called in, April wasn't here, so I took the phone call as a vet. He was like, hey, I live out in Arizona. I was at the VA and, you know, the doctor, whoever it was he was meeting with, he said, he put three flyers in front of me. He said, if you want a dog now, go to this organization, right? He said, if you want a dog now, but you'll have to pay for it, you go to this organization. If you want the best, you go to this organization. And he called us and he said, you were the best.
Wow.
And he said, not only do you provide good quality dogs, he said, you'll take care of me for life. And I was like, I don't know who this doctor is you're seeing, but I need to thank him because yeah, that information's accurate.
Wow.
Right? So hospitality, as you mentioned, is a huge thing for us. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, when they associate a workplace and they say family and things like that, sometimes it gets convoluted. You may not want to work with your family, right? but we really try to make that family environment and that lifelong commitment and extend that hospitality to our veterans, regardless if they need a place to stay. If you need me to help you put in a washer and dryer, if you need me to drive up and get your dog in Oklahoma because you got to go to the hospital, we're here for you. I mean, I have a veteran trainer, something I didn't mention. I have a veteran trainer and her job specifically is to travel the country and go to these veterans' houses if they can't make it to us. That's her whole job. She's she's actually a retired chief warrant officer in the Navy.
Okay.
And was one of our first dog trainers, been with us for many, many years. And that's her job is if you can't make it to us, if you're having a problem, we'll come to you.
That's incredible.
So again, hospitality is something that Patriot Paws puts at one of the top of its priority list.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well,
it's palpable. And it's I mean, your facilities are beautiful. Everyone that we've met here has been nothing but kind and absolutely incredible. So thank you for all that you do, Rick. It's
absolutely
truly it's outstanding.
It is our pleasure.
Yeah, the amount that you guys give back, it's changing people's lives. So
thanks for your continued service and telling the story of Patriot Paws. We're excited and you know, to be honest, we get a lot of guests that reach out, and I'm sure there's going to be quite a few that say, how can I get linked up with them to get a service dog? And that answer would be?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to patriotpaws.org, it's really simple. You go to our veterans page. It'll be one of the tabs at the top of the webpage. There is a preliminary application you fill out. And basically, once our veteran team receives that application, we will send you a little bit more of a detailed application you filled out, and then we'll walk you through the process step by step.
Okay.
One thing that's, you know, that a lot of people, you know, question about is you have to put in the work, right? I'm going to do my best to be able to hold, you know, to walk you through step by step, but you have to show us that you really want this and that you're ready to make this commitment. Because again, we're giving you a medical device that my team has put its heart and soul into to improve the quality of life. And if you're not going to respect that process, then, you know, it's one of those issues that if you can't go through these steps of just filling out the basic forms and getting the doctor's notes that you need and getting, if you're a veteran that works, we have to have a note from your employer and things like that. Mm. It's just putting in the work to get them, right?
Yeah.
So if you have any issues, call us. Our number is 972-772-3282. Ask for April. April's our veteran coordinator. You got to meet her earlier. You can also, if email's more your track, you can send an email to office@patriotpaws.org. And we will do our best to walk you through the process and be sure that you can become a member of this family. If you can't, if we can't meet your needs, we'll provide you with a resource of someone who may be able to help your need sooner than we can.
That's fantastic.
Beautiful.
Well, we will include the links to your website and your socials and everything in there. So if you guys are interested in getting in touch with Patriot Paws, it'll be on the info below. Just click one of the buttons. You'll know where to find it. Rick, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having
me. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for watching. Interact with the video somehow. We do the same for you. We'll see you next week.
Until next time.
Bye.